everybody, and welcome to the Internet Storm Center podcast. This is a special presentation of all the speeches that were given by the handlers at SANS 2009. The first is a presentation by Deb Hale entitled Iowa Floods and Tornadoes, Losses and IT Lessons Learned, Disaster Recovery and Restoration After the Storms. I hope you enjoy. Thank you.
I'm going to give you a little overview of the timeline of events, what the events were, and then tell you what has happened since those events took place and how it has changed not only our community, but our state and our whole region. Okay, severe storms and tornadoes after winter of record snowfall. We had 121.6 inches of snow. The winter a year ago, the winter of 2007-2008. And we had a wetter than normal spring. We knew as we were going through and doing some of our planning stuff with the disaster committee, we knew we were in for some rough times. One of the guys from the National Weather Service in Sioux Falls came down to meet with us, and he said, we are in a very, very active weather pattern right now. So we are probably going to have some fun. Well, it wasn't really fun, but from May 25th to June 19th, the state of Iowa experienced one of the most active storm patterns that our state has ever experienced. We had 15 thunderstorms roll through, funnel clouds reports of 104 funnel clouds, and we had 8 active tornado touchdowns. 3 of them were EF5s, which is the worst magnitude of tornado that you can have. Parkersburg, Iowa, a little community just to the east of Cedar Rapids. That's the picture of the tornado, the picture that was taken of the tornado as it was heading for Parkersburg. Sunday, May 25th, 2008, at 5:30 p.m., the sirens, the weather alerts went off. Appleton, New Hartford, Waterloo, Dunkerton, and Parkersburg were in the line of these severe storms. New Hartford may not ever come back again. It may never be rebuilt. That little community may very well be gone. The others are right now trying to rebuild. Estimated wind speeds up to 205 miles per hour for wind speeds with this guy. There were 6 people dead and 67 wounded in that one storm event that took place. Now, significance, Parkersburg population is 1,866 people. There were 850 housing units, 550 families, and medium income is $32,000. Well, it was at that time. Over 400 housing units were damaged or destroyed. Almost half of their housing was gone. The roof was blown off of the high school and the gym was destroyed. The gym was completely leveled. There was nothing left of it. The courthouse was destroyed. The town, the actual town as well as their county that had some historical documents, some detailed documents were destroyed completely in the storm, gone. They lost their historical records that they had. Damage to a little town of 1,866 people, over $6 million. Council Bluffs, Iowa, on June 8th, just a few days later, at 3:55 p.m., we had an EF1 tornado. Went through the Omaha area, Omaha, Nebraska, and was headed for Council Bluffs. At 5:55 that same day, an EF2 tornado with straight line winds of 120 mile an hour went right back through the same area. Hail the size of quarters. My son lives down in Omaha and he went out in his driveway and picked up the hail from a 1 square foot section of his driveway and put it in the bowl, filled his salad bowl with hail. The hail in Omaha, Council Bluffs area that day was 1 inch thick, quarter-sized hail balls. Roofs were blown off of the businesses, windows broken, buildings damaged. There was a super target that was under construction and was about two-thirds of the way completed, and it collapsed that structure, and they started all over again. Property lost $3.5 million. Mason City, Iowa, another little small town in central Iowa. On June 8th, the same day as the storms down at Council Bluffs, 5 inches of rain fell in just over 2 hours. The Winnebago River crested at 18.2 feet over flood stage. Imagine 18 foot of water where it's not supposed to be. Caused a levee break, which then created an evacuation situation. One of the problems with the Mason City area was they had no place to evacuate to. It's a pretty out-of-the-way little community, and people were totally devastated. It was the control situation there was horrible. We had a terrible time even getting people to cooperate because they've never experienced any kind of situation like this in their community before. Their water supply was completely contaminated. They could not, even when they went back to their homes, they could not use their water for a month while they were doing some cleanup. Water and electricity was shut off. They had no electricity for about 3 weeks, no water for about a month. Okay, while all of the repairs were being done. Population of Mason City is 12,360 people. 40% of them had to be evacuated. Okay, think about having to evacuate that many people when they don't want to go. Blencoe, Iowa. Some of you may have heard on the national news about Blencoe, Iowa. This was perhaps our most tragic event that we had to deal with last year. This was the Little Sioux Boy Scout camp. We had a bunch of our scouts down there for one of their week-long retreats, and we lost some boys that day. One of the boys that we lost, a 14-year-old from Eagle Grove, Iowa, was an only child. His parents had no, I mean, their life, their world has just totally been turned upside down. His Earl's parents, though, have taken this loss to make it good, and they've started a bunch of foundations and stuff in his name, and they're out trying to help people to understand why it's so important that we protect our young people, and we're ready, that we prepare. This is the tornado that hit Blencoe, and this was at like 6 o'clock in the evening, which in Iowa at 6 o'clock in the evening, right now, bright sunny, normally bright sunny. This, my husband was on his way back from Lincoln. He had been in a meeting in Lincoln, and as they were driving, he said the sky was totally black. They had to turn on their headlights, and the street lights in some of the small communities were coming on. Just as he drove down Interstate 29, just got past Interstate 29, one of the guys that was with him saw the funnel cloud coming, and he said, "Oh my God." And about that time, it went over and it knocked down the Boy Scout camp. So Wednesday, June 11th, about 6:35, the Little Sioux Boy Scout camp, estimated wind speeds up to 225 miles per hour. We lost 4 boys that day. We had 64 kids and adults that were there at the camp that were transported to the emergency rooms. The Blencoe is about halfway between Omaha and Sioux City, so they took some of them to Omaha and they took some of them to, brought some of them up to us in Sioux City. Okay, Cedar Rapids. Now remember, this was all within a 3-week time period. Cedar Rapids, a year ago today, 1 year ago today, this is what downtown Cedar Rapids looked like. Okay, 1 year ago today. And there's some of the pictures. Like I said, this is one of the most tragic pictures that we have, mainly because we had never really thought about the animals. You know, we've thought about all of the things that could happen and we've tried to prepare for it, but we didn't think about what would happen to the animals with this type of magnitude. Now, this storm was a 500-year flood. It's only supposed to happen once every 500 years, thank heavens. But, you know, animals, whether they be the farm animals or whether they be someone's pet, we didn't think about the animals. And if you see this right here, that's a train bridge. And next to that train bridge is all of these houses from this one neighborhood were washed right off of their foundations and washed into the train bridge. And this is where they're sandbagging around the train bridge trying to keep the water from coming over. I have another picture that shows the damage to the train bridge. They wanted to keep the water off the bridge because they wanted to try and protect the tracks as much as possible. But what they didn't realize is as those houses came down, it actually knocked the train bridge right off its foundation. So that train bridge had to be replaced. We all know what street signs look like. You know how tall they are. I'll give you an idea how high the water was. Over 10 square miles was completely underwater. We had, there was one section of Cedar Rapids, one neighborhood in Cedar Rapids that had a lot of these little one-story houses, and there was absolutely no sign of those houses. It looked like this was just part of the river. Not even a peak of a roof sticking out of the water. Cedar River crested on June 13th at 31.1 feet. The town of Oakville went underwater, which is just to the north of Cedar Rapids, went underwater on the 14th. The Iowa River crested at 31.5 feet on the 15th, and the Mississippi River crested at 25.73 feet on the 17th. Now again, imagine that much water where it's not supposed to be. Cedar Rapids is over 120,000 population, 52,000 homes, median income is 43,000. Major employers in the Cedar Rapids area, some of you may have heard of General Mills. They're one of the major suppliers. Quaker Oats had two of its manufacturing facilities damaged with water damage. They had other facilities that they could move those operations to. They slowed down production a little bit, but they really didn't feel a major sting, they thought, until they tried to get people to work. And the people that lived in the area where the flooding, okay, there's this flooding here. This part of the city didn't have any flooding. And the people that worked for Quaker Oats, some of them lived in this part of the city and had to go to this part of the city to work. No way to get there. That was one of the biggest lessons. Another big lesson that was learned was sometimes you're not directly impacted. However, it's better to look at how you get from A to B and is there something in the middle that can cause a problem. Rockwell Collins, GE Finance, and Archer Daniels Midland. All of the downtown businesses were flooded. Nearly all. I think there were 5 businesses that escaped, only because they were far enough away and up on a little bit of a hill. They didn't get any physical damage, but of course they didn't have any employees that could get to work. County and city offices were underwater. The county courthouse had all of their historical documents in the basement of the courthouse, and when they got the warning that this was going to happen, they had everybody start carrying that stuff up to the first floor of the courthouse, thinking that, oh, on the first floor, they'll be safe. The water covered the second floor. So they lost everything because they thought the first floor would be safe, second floor had water in it. Entire neighborhoods are destroyed and they're still sitting empty. There are houses that have suffered damage that are uninhabitable, and more than 80,000 tons of debris have been removed so far. Okay? Over 18,000 people were in the flood area, so they had to evacuate over 18,000 people. As I said, some of those people really had a hard time getting them out because they wanted to bring their pets with them, and they were told, we don't have any place for the pets. You can't bring your pets. Families in the flood area, there were Section 8 housing assistance given to only 120 of the families. Okay? The others didn't qualify. Estimated flood recovery, volunteer hours, there were over 58,000 volunteer hours put in the first 2 weeks of the flooding. We're still calculating, a year later, they're still calculating the volunteer hours that are still going on. We had 169 people, families, in temporary shelter during the first 3 weeks of the disaster, and we had 268 families still living in FEMA trailers because they still don't have a home to go to. Many of the people lost everything. They lost their homes, they lost their jobs, they lost their neighborhood, they lost their church. Luckily, and it's just a miracle, we lost no people in the Cedar Rapids flood. There were no deaths. 7,198 parcels of land were affected by the flooding. 5,390 of them were residential. The cost for the public facilities, the public infrastructure, so the state, the county, and the city, their damage was $2.4 billion. Okay, and part of that is some future flood management that's going to be going on. As many as 1,500 properties will be demolished. Okay, so 1,500 homes and businesses will no longer exist. 86 farms in Linn County were damaged. We lost, they figured that the damage estimate just in the loss of our livestock is over $1 billion. And total estimated loss for Cedar Rapids, for the residents of Cedar Rapids, not counting what went on with the government part of it. Private and industry and homeowners and people lost. Right now, it looks like just over $3 billion. More than 700 businesses sustained damage. Of the businesses, 42% never reopened. So we automatically, in the Cedar Rapids area, we lost 42% of the businesses that were impacted. And right now, because of the slow going, getting the FEMA money in, getting insurance money in, fighting with the insurance companies, should it be covered, should it not, 30% more. At this point in time, we think probably another 30% or 30% of the remaining businesses will probably fail within the next year. Okay? And more than 1,500 jobs have been lost in that community. Okay, now, Sioux City. July 21st, a thunderstorm with straight line winds of 100 miles an hour went through home. That's where I live. We were feeling pretty good that we had missed all of the other stuff that was going on. When this storm hit us on July 21st, we had trees down, we had power lines down, we had an estimated loss of $1.5 million. Guess what, you guys? 1.5 million loss is not enough to get a disaster declaration. We found that out the hard way. 99 counties in Iowa, 92 of them have declarations of disaster. 85 of the counties had presidential declarations. Okay, very, very large amount of damage. Some of the lessons we learned, businesses not directly affected by the event still experienced interruption. One of the biggest lessons that we learned statewide was when your employees have their personal lives impacted by something that's going on in your community, maybe your business is okay and you've sustained no damage, but you may be working with a lot of employees gone because they're trying to deal with the loss of their own property, the loss of, in the case of the Blanco tornadoes and the Parkersburg tornadoes, the families were dealing with the death of their children or the death of a loved one. This is one of the hardest things, I think, for when you start working on a disaster recovery plan. I think this is one of the hardest things for management to comprehend. I think it's one of the hardest things for them to understand is you don't have to have directly, you don't have to be directly impacted by the disaster to be impacted by the disaster, right? That's right. You're not going to come to work if you don't have a house to live in. You're not going to come to work if your house has got 18 foot of water over the top of it. It's trauma. It was just unbelievable trauma. Our Safeguard Iowa coordinator, state coordinator, when this whole thing started with the Parkersburg tornadoes and the absolute devastation, she was in the emergency operations center for 2 straight weeks, never left, okay? She had to be there. Her family was directly impacted, but she had to be there. She had no choice. That's a rare case. Much of the damage was not covered by standard business insurance. We really, the state is really struggling with this, and they struggled with this during Hurricane Katrina. They've struggled with it with other catastrophic events. What is an act of God? And that's what the insurance companies are saying to some of these businesses. Now, this is a 500-year flood. These people in some of the businesses in the downtown Cedar Rapids area couldn't even buy flood insurance because they weren't in a flood area. But their insurance companies, they're having a problem getting the insurance companies to pay because the damage was from a flood. They weren't able to buy flood insurance, but they've been flooded, so now are we going to pay? We had a huge communications failure, a communications breakdown. Part of it was due to just an overload of the communication system statewide. Part of it was because of damage. This is Quest in our Cedar Rapids office. The Quest manager sent me this. On the Cedar Rapids flooding, approximately 200 design service repair tickets from customers in the Cedar Rapids area, and there were over 500 statewide. They have 17,000 POTS and broadband customers have report tickets, mostly attributed to the floods and the storms. So they had 17,000 reports of outage that they were trying to handle all at one time. 1,350 maintenance tickets for rebuilding terminals and pedestals that they lost in the flooding. They lost some fiber, quite a bit of fiber actually. They did finally call in for help, and they ended up getting more than 200 technicians from 11 other regions within the state that sent people over to help them out. That's just one company. Imagine what NetINS and all the rest of them went through. Communications failures, part of it was due to the fact that we can't communicate, one community can't communicate with another community. They're working on a different band, a different radio frequency. In our area, we're remedying that. I'm going to talk a little bit about that program. Animal care and displacement. Like I've said a couple of times, the people would not leave their homes because they had no place to take their pets. 911 doesn't always work. And I tell people this all the time. Yeah, right now you pick up the phone, you call 911, and you chances are going to get a police car, a fire truck, or whatever it is that you need, an ambulance. But if you've got 17,000 people all dialing 911 at the same time, if the phone lines work, if the communication doesn't fall down, they're going to say, okay, yeah, right, take a number, wait in line, right? And I tell people this all the time at home when I talk to groups at home about disaster planning and preparedness. I tell them, you are going to have to take care of yourself. If we have a regional disaster or we have a statewide disaster, you have to take care of yourself. You have to take care of your employees. You're not going to be able to pick up the phone and call 911 and have a fire truck come to get with the paddles to resuscitate someone that's just had a heart attack. You're going to have to do that yourself. Things that we take for granted may be what we miss the most. Okay? Having your employees there to do their job when they're needed to do their job. Picking up your cell phone and making a call. Cell phones get plugged up real fast. Those things that we use the most often, we take for granted. Planning, preparation, and exercising are critical to survival. Absolutely critical. And the biggest lesson, emotional impact and stress-related issues may be harder to overcome than the actual physical issues themselves. We still have people dealing with it was a year ago Friday, that the tornado hit the Little Sioux Boy Scout camp. They had a memorial celebration, they had a memorial celebration at the Boy Scout camp, and they're hoping to help to be able to bring those people all back together and start that process of healing. One little boy that they interviewed on the news at home said, I hope after I go to this, I won't have nightmares anymore. Okay, so what are we doing today? About 3 years ago in the Des Moines area, they started an organization called Safeguard Iowa. That organization was up and running at full speed ahead in the Des Moines area when this whole thing happened. In April, prior to the June events that took place, in April, Northwest Iowa started a chapter, a region of Safeguard Iowa. We are now in the process of bringing together public and private entities and working on a plan for what we need to do as a community to make our way through any kind of disaster that may happen. Tri-State Disaster Committee, one of the projects that was undertaken by the Tri-State Disaster Committee, which is that group that there's three counties in Iowa, three counties in Nebraska, three counties in South Dakota that we all come together at the border. One of the projects we started working on about 4 years ago was Starcom Mobile. And Starcom Mobile, what that does is brought together all nine counties' radio systems. We now all talk on the same frequency. Our firefighters, our police, our sheriff's department, our ambulance operators, everybody is working together on the same radio frequency. Now they have the ability to roll off to their own frequency if they need the space. But in the midst of a disaster, an area-wide disaster, our region is under attack from whatever, those guys can all communicate together. We all know what the other group is doing, and we consolidate all of the efforts. We have regional response teams. And our regional response team, if there is an event in Plymouth County, our Woodbury County response team will go to Plymouth County to help them. If there's an incident in Cherokee County, we go to Cherokee County. Something happens across the river, we go across the river. And you know what? We don't care who's going to pay for it. We don't care if it's Nebraska, Iowa, or South Dakota. Because in the end, we know that somebody ultimately will pay for it, right? So it, in order for us, we really felt several years ago, we really felt that if we were going to protect our communities, we had to forget about all the political BS and just be a team. We have coordinated planning and exercising. We plan for multiple kinds of disasters, and we exercise for it. We right now are having a four-state drill. It's called Vigilant Guard. Four-state drill, Iowa, Nebraska, Kansas, and Missouri have come together today. They're actually having Vigilant Guard started yesterday. And for Northwest Iowa, we are having a mock flood with a massive outbreak of a communicable disease as a result of the flooding, so we have to do mass inoculation of the residents. I'm here, I don't have to play. On July 15th, we'll have another exercise. We've got an air show coming up in, on August 1st and 2nd. We have an air guard base about a mile and a half from where my corporate offices are at. And they fly the big fuel tankers full of fuel. And we're having an air show at the base. We're bringing in some F-14s, some F-111s, a stealth fighter, F-16, a B-52 bomber. So we're having all of these military craft brought in. And so before we bring 30,000 people on base for this event, and we're going to have some flying acrobatics and that kind of thing, we are going to have a drill that will simulate a crash of one of those tankers into the crowd of 30,000 people that are watching. Okay, so that's going to be on July 15th. So we work together, we coordinate together. We have a casino, a floating casino, that is part of our planning team. So a couple months ago, we had a drill that the boat, the gambling boat, was sinking. That they had hit a iceberg. It was early spring. They hit an iceberg. The boat is sinking. People don't want to leave because they got their money in their machines. So you know, that was kind of a fun exercise. We've had our local school district is trying to do preparedness training for their students. And one of the preparedness things that we did this spring with them is we had simulated a bus crash, a bus that crashed into, collided head-on with a fuel tanker truck. And the fuel tanker exploded. Now, the scary thing about this is, about 3 weeks ago, I woke up, turned the news on in the morning at 5:30 in the morning, and they said, you can't go down I-29, it's closed because of the tanker explosion. And I'm going, a tanker truck, the car was going the wrong way on the interstate. It was going southbound in the northbound lane, collided head-on with a fuel tanker truck full of fuel, full of gasoline, that tipped over and knocked another truck that was full of anhydrous, because we are an agricultural community, full of anhydrous, dumped. Okay? That was a real life situation. But we had drilled, we had practiced, we had talked about what would happen. So it came out early. Luckily, the anhydrous tank didn't break open. Then the Iowa Governor's Conference on Homeland Security. Every year, We have a 5-day governor's conference, and we bring people from the private sector and the public emergency management sectors together, and we have all kinds of training sessions that we do. Last year, one of the training sessions that we had was a active shooter at a school, and a guy that came in and talked to us about Columbine and what happened there and what school districts need to know in order to prepare them in the event of an active shooter. Okay. There's some websites where you can take a look at more information about what we're doing in our community or in Iowa. We're not doing anything any different than everybody else, a lot of other people and a lot of other communities are doing. We just have a group of people that are very dedicated to getting these plans in place and making sure that we're ready to help each other. Any questions? Nothing. Timing's not bad. The biggest impact was the communication failures across the state. One of our vendors, let me see if I can pull up that picture, because just a week before this whole thing started, as a matter of fact, it was right in between the Parkersburg tornado and the flooding in Cedar Rapids. I was in Cedar Rapids and did a talk at the state Safeguard Iowa conference on Wednesday, and the flooding started in Cedar Rapids on Thursday. I had left Cedar Rapids and driven to Des Moines and heard about what was going on in Des Moines. While I was in Cedar Rapids, I went to visit one of our vendors. Okay, and this vendor, I don't know if you can see this picture very well, but the vendor, this is their office building, okay? They were on the second floor of this office building. On the first floor is a bank. You know how high the bank ceilings are. And then they were on the second floor. This company is called Security Coverage, and they provide antivirus, anti-spyware, firewall. It's a suite of products that they provide, and they sell to residential customers. And we are kind of a reseller for them. So I thought, well, I'm going to be in Cedar Rapids. I'm just going to stop down to their offices and visit with them. I was there on Tuesday night. Went up to their offices and met all the guys I talked to on the phone, guys and gals I talked to on the phone, got to know them pretty well. And I found out about what was going on in Cedar Rapids and tried for several days to get a hold of them. And then one day I finally got through to their 800 number and I said, so how are you guys doing? Did you guys miss the damage? And they said, oh no. No, we are running all of our servers out of our employees' homes. Now, the owner of this company used to be in DR, used to be a disaster recovery planner, so he kind of had an idea what he should do. He had a really good idea. He had it all planned out. They evacuated their facilities, got everybody up and running, got the servers up and running at employees' homes, and I said, so did you guys get water in your office? And he said, oh yeah, we have a foot and a half of water in their second floor offices. The bank was completely underwater. One day I called them and I said, I had called them for something. I said, so are you guys going to be able to move back into your offices pretty soon? And he said, well, yeah, as soon as they get done laundering the money from the bank. And I started to laugh, and they said they finally took everything out, got everything out of the bank vault and out of the lock boxes, and they sent the money out to be cleaned. You know, money's cloth and paper. You run it through the wash machine, and it's fine. So they had sent it out to one of the places where they clean money, And then the bank was in the process of remodeling, and then once that was done, they would be able to go back into their area, get their area cleaned up, and do what needed to be done. But a foot and a half of water in the second floor of their office building. Big lesson learned. Just because you're on the second floor doesn't mean you're safe. The communications thing was the quest, you know, the whole communications problem. We lost some pretty critical fiber components in the Cedar Rapids and Des Moines area, which then slowed down the communications. I work for an ISP. Long Lines provides internet service, wireless cell phone service. We have cable TV service, and we have plain old telephone service. So, you know, we count on our department. I work for the data department, and we count on that communications being there. And if communications slows down, our customers start complaining. So we count on everything working well. Things slowed down a little bit, but luckily, NetINS and some of the other bigger players in the market were able to quickly reroute traffic. So we did notice some slowdown, but not a significant amount. Other lessons, IT lessons learned from the folks in the Cedar Rapids area. Rockwell Collins had lost some pretty significant facilities, and getting those facilities moved. One of the biggest problems that they had to overcome is there was no place available in the Cedar Rapids area to move their operations to, even temporarily. Okay, we had a printing company that lost their entire operation. They were a pretty large printing company. Printed a lot of brochures and a lot of magazines, a lot of inserts for newspapers. They print business cards. They print stationery. They lost their entire operation. They're back up and running, and they barely missed a beat. You know why? Because they had a gentleman's agreement with a printer in another community, and they transferred all of their printing orders over to this other company, and this other company printed their stuff and shipped it as if it belonged to them, as if they were the one that did it. If you can find another company that's in the same business as you are that's willing to do that for you, man, that company barely missed a beat. Their facility is rebuilt. Other IT problems we did experience, and we don't, a lot of us think about the telephone still being an important part of IT. We did have quite a few businesses, though not directly impacted by the storms and by the damage that had taken place, but they couldn't communicate. They couldn't talk to other branches within their company. They couldn't talk to their vendors. They couldn't talk to their customers because traffic was tied up. Telephones just didn't work the way they're supposed to. There was, in the Cedar Rapids area, there is one company agricultural, they did grain drying and processing, and they were pretty good size. They were good size because Quaker Oats and General Mills are both in that area, and they did a lot of the processing for Quaker Oats and General Mills. They're not going to be able to come back. They're done. They had four silos where they stored the grain. They lost four silos full of grain. They lost their entire operation that day, and they just couldn't come back. There was a couple of companies, and I'm not going to mention any names here because they probably wouldn't like me very well if I said who it was. There are a couple of companies that Their backup tapes were in the building when it flooded, in the building with their servers, and they lost all their data. We had the Linn County lost a significant portion of their data because their servers were underwater. Parkersburg, there was a couple of businesses in Parkersburg. They don't have a whole lot of businesses there, but there were a couple of businesses, very highly IT-intensive type businesses. One of those businesses gone. They didn't have any backups of their data. They lost their building. They lost their servers. They found papers strewn along the farm fields for miles around from, you know, customer information, and this company just said that's it, we're done. So yeah, we did lose some pretty good businesses in our community. I think the biggest lesson that's been learned, and I think the thing that we take the most pride in, is our communities pulled together, all of the communities that have been damaged, and I'm very, very proud of every one of those communities. They have come together, and they are rebuilding. For the most part, Parkersburg is back. It's about 90% complete. The communities around the Parkersburg area pitched in and went over and helped rebuild homes and helped rebuild businesses, helped get the physical infrastructure back up and running. So I think that was probably the most positive lesson learned, is that we as a state and we as within our communities pulled together when this type of situation happened, and we did what needed to be done to get everybody back within a reasonable amount of time back online. Quest was fabulous in the Cedar Rapids area. They worked nonstop. They brought in as many resources as they could. NetINS was very good about getting circuits switched. All it took with the businesses in that area that were not damaged, or all over the state that were not damaged, that were experiencing infrastructure problems, all it took was a phone call, and the NetINS folks were ready, willing, and able to help get the problems resolved and get people back online. Communities came together. And we learned a lot from that, and we know now where our weak points are at. We've identified some of those weak points, and we're going to build those into our plans. Of the businesses that have their plans in place, there has not been any of them that I've heard of that have closed. No, they have plans. They knew what they needed to do. We had a couple of pretty good-sized insurance companies in the Cedar Rapids area that were impacted by this flooding. They knew what they had to do. They moved their employees. Some of their employees went to Chicago to work temporarily. Some of them they sent down to Kansas City to work temporarily. And those that their homes were affected by this, they didn't even try and force them to go, but the people who were not directly impacted were moved to one of the other locations, and they took over operations and just ran flawlessly. So it can be done. One of the other things that I should have brought a picture of, I should have had on my list of things we've done. We just opened a new facility in Sioux City, which I'm very, very proud of, because I was part of the implementation, the planning team for this, called the Security Institute. The Security Institute is a high, very, very, very high tech facility. We now house our 911 center out of the building of the Security Institute. It's built on a hill on the community college campus. We have three redundant rings in and out of the campus. We have redundant telephone service. We have redundant, we have our own water source, so if we lost water, we could still continue to operate. The 911 center, it completely runs out of that building, out of the basement of the building. It's a tornado-resistant building, we hope. It's built on a hill, but it's on the back side of a hill, so it's protected. In addition to the 911 center being run out of there, we have a state-of-the-art emergency operations center. Des Moines, which is the capital, has the emergency operations center at the Stark Armory, and they are envious of our emergency operations center. The building right now is being used for classes on the first floor of this building. They can use it for all different types of training classes. We train firefighters, we train emergency management personnel, we have police training. We have a Faraday cage where our computer forensics students, which I helped design the curriculum for that class, our computer forensic students go in and turn loose worms and watch them as they run around the network. And then they try and the instructors then bring in some that they've never seen before and they unleash them in this room. And then the students have to try and capture them, figure out what they are, and basically dissect them. It's the only Faraday cage in the Midwest. So it's just awesome. And in the basement of this facility is a 6,000 square foot bunker. That 6,000 square foot bunker is owned by my company. We're really excited about that. We are actually doing housing data, backup data, and offering backup service to our customers and to businesses in the community. They can bring in their own equipment, their redundant equipment, and put it in this totally 100% secure facility, or we can house their data for them. Okay, we're offering data deduplication service. So we're really excited about the Security Institute. If you go to Google and you Google Sioux City and the Security Institute, you'll see some great information about that. So we're offering all kinds of computer security classes now to the students, to people in the Siouxland area. We're doing computer forensics. We're doing all kinds of really high-end trainings. We're pretty excited about that. Okay? That's it.
Thank you.